This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 791, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you, who will really want to double down on their hand washing and wearing the masks again.
We told you.
For a little while.
We warned you.
We did say that, and look what you did. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 791. I'm Josh Flanagan. And yes, with me back again, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
To save everybody from the monotony of my endless droning.
Good job last week. It's not easy.
Thank you. It isn't. Somebody asked, like, did you edit it? And I was like, no. I edited it three times. Two of them were for yawning in the middle. Like, I just talked so much I wasn't breathing enough.
Sure.
And then the last one was like 5 minutes to go. I just was like, I need a drink. Like, it went. So,
yeah.
I slept hard that night. It's fun, though. It's not often. We're iFanboy every week. We read a stack of comics. And sometimes the word stack, I mean, they're not literally stacks anymore, but sometimes that doesn't even cover the amount of comic book pages.
I made a horrible error. I should have taken this week off. I really should have looked ahead because this was insane. We're going to get to that in 1 second, but clearly I should have plan better and taken the giant week off, not the regular week.
Those would have hit you some other week. There's no winning.
Yeah.
Actually, I still had books. Oh, but just to finish it up, we read the stack of comics. One of us picks the one they like best. We call that the pick of the week. That's what the show's named after.
Mm-hmm.
I was off a month ago, basically. I was away for a weekend, and both last week and this week, I had catch-up books in there that I had to read. And I was like, oh, so it was on top of all the other ones that were not included in the counts I gave you, by the way.
That will come up in the email segment, but yes. I didn't read all my books from last week. I read most of them, though, but like
nice.
Over a longer period of time.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about the pick of the week. We're going to talk about a lot of other books. So many this week that you will, this is a teaser, there's a return of a storied and legendary segment. We're going to talk about the patron pook,
pook,
which is
it's a Canadian. Wow. All right. This is the week it's been. This is it.
We will answer with listener mail if we have time. I'm already having fun. It says we will have fun, but I'm currently having fun. I'm very excited to do this again. Now, there will be spoilers about the books. Connor, you thankfully had the pick after I had two in a row.
I did. Like I said, it was a lot of books. This would have been Comic-Con week, maybe. It's either the previous week or this week. And usually what happens at Comic-Con weekend or the weekend after or before is they dump all the books. I don't know why.
So I thought that too. I thought, well, last week would have been Comic-Con week, but there's these or whatever. But normally it's a lot of number ones and miniseries and, you know, sort of the highlight stuff. But this was just issues. Yeah. Many, many issues, mid-run issues. Not bad.
No. In a normal week, I have like high teens in the books, like a normal average week. Probably like, let's say 18, just guess, is like the number of books I have in a week. If it's a heavy week, it's like, oh, I've got 24 books this week. Or if it's a light week, it's like I've got 10 or 11. I had 34 books this week. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying the books come out Tuesday, Wednesday. We record the show Friday morning. It's not a lot of time, especially if you have a demanding job and family and other commitments. So listen, I had a great time reading the books because I thought there was 34 books. There's going to be some good ones in there. But it was a lot. It was a lot. And the pick of the week ended up being Beta Ray Bill number 5, the final issue of the miniseries from Daniel Warren Johnson, Mike Spicer, Joe Sabino, Marvel Comics. And with the first two issues were picks of the week. And now that Marvel only puts out 5-issue miniseries instead of 6, at 20 pages instead of 22, we lost like 32 pages of story in this.
You know what? I will, while I know that there's an economic thing going on there, a lot of times 6 issues felt like too many. And so in this instance, and I think in a lot of the ones that have come before it, 5's pretty good. I think, you know, it's like the feeling of stop going on so long or, you know, oh, you wrapped it up too quick. I almost prefer the earlier because it, you know, makes them have to make choices.
Sure, get out early. And so the story of Beta Ray Bill has been that Bill had a falling out with Thor. Thor destroyed his hammer, Bill's hammer, and the hammer that Bill uses to turn back from a cybernetic horse into his humanoid alien self. And so he's been depressed. And he's tracked down Odin, who is now a hipster barfly instead of the All-Father.
Wait, hold on. Let's not blame Thor entirely for this.
Mm-hmm.
It was his lady friend who was like, oh, I can't do this.
Well,
she's
he couldn't
the
change
one.
Back. And then Sif, who Bill had been hooking up with, was like, yeah, I can't do it with the horse. And so that's part of the reason why he got depressed. And so Odin sent him off and said, hey, if you can go to hell, basically, and defeat Surtur, he has an axe for you.
Powerful weapon.
That you can use to turn back to your old self. So this whole thing has been a journey to hell. Along the way, we picked up Pip. We picked up Scourge. And then Bill's ship turned into a sexy robot. And we've had a little crew. And in this issue is the final battle between Bill and Surtur.
But let's talk about, he's got 2 all-time road dogs.
It's a good crew. It's a good crew.
It's a good crew. I don't want you to undersell that because Scourge, who I cannot usually stand when he shows up. He was in the Thor book for a while and I was like, ugh, he's annoying. Like in this, he's dead. So they grabbed him from Valhalla. Yeah. You know, now he's just a good time Charlie. He's there to help his bro out.
He's just happy and he's not in Valhalla, which look, Valhalla is a great place to hang. It's a good hang, but
yeah,
it's not being on a road trip with your boys.
And also sexy ship robot lady.
Yeah.
She turned into a gigantic gun for him, and it brought tears to his eyes. He's a good dude in this.
He just loves guns.
Loves them.
So, also, we should mention Daniel Warren Johnson also on the road trip. He's just in the belly of the ship, but he doesn't get to go on the adventures.
Life of a comic artist.
I think what's one of the stories of this, it's true. Besides the fact this is a terrific story, it has a lot of emotional resonance, and the ending is pretty hefty. I think, A, it's your discovery of Daniel Warren Johnson.
Yep.
You've seen him before. In fact, someone on Instagram in the comments of our account pointed out that the first time you saw his art in the show, you called it unprofessional, which is fine. Things change.
Listen.
People have arcs with art. They enter it and they may not understand it, and then they get to it later. That's happened before.
I get things wrong. That's absolutely true. And I think with me, this happens with all the stuff I like, you know, bands or art. Sometimes you need to give something context.
Mm-hmm.
To put it into a place that you understand it. So if you take like that other story that he did, the Murder Falcon, is that what it
was? No,
it
was before that. It was the Man Thing.
Huh.
It's a long time. You're not going to remember it.
No, totally not. But, you know, you take like the other stories were kind of esoteric and pretty surrealistic. And I have a hard time with that. But you take what he's doing here and you click it into the context of stuff that we do understand in these stories. And then you get to see the skill in it, but also like the uniqueness of it, if that makes sense. Like you see how that voice gets brought into it.
Just sometimes you have to, you know, spend some time in with art. Like I, you know, didn't like Jordi Bernet when he started on Jonah Hex all those years ago. And by the end of it, he was my favorite artist in the book. So
yeah,
it just happens. Just that's to happen sometimes. Anyway, yeah. I will point it out because this is a tour de force issue in a series that's been a tour de force of art. But this is the big fight. So Daniel Warren Johnson gets to really go all out. This week in general was really high on the Gosh scale, the good old superhero scale.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of books where I was like, that was awesome. But this was just giant panel after big fight after Searcher punching Bill way into the distance. And
foreshortened punches and kicks.
Bill
and
charging at Searcher and then tons of sound effects on the boards.
Yep.
But also very emotional, resonant. You know, Pip gets just impaled and Scourge cries about his giant gun. And they all come together. They all work together to defeat Searcher. And you know, the ship becomes the gun. Scourge shoots him. Pip distracts him, then Bill finally gets the axe and cuts off Surtur's head. Now, Surtur's not dead because he's basically one of the many devils in the Marvel Universe, but he's defeated, at least temporarily. It was a thrill ride to get to the point where it ended and you got to breathe, and then there was the fallout, and it was just like, wow, that was a great comic book and a great series. This is one of the best miniseries that Marvel's put out in ages.
Just real quick, when you see sends the list to me, or I send the list to Connor when you've got the pick, and you know, I see what it is, and I hadn't read this yet. Part of it, I had so many books, I actually got to it when I was in like the churn of it. I got to this and Strange Adventures, and I was like, I'm leaving those for later.
Yeah,
because I didn't want to, you know, just be trying to get to the next book as I was reading through it. So I hadn't read it, and obviously we'd enjoyed it a lot, and you made it the pick, and I was like, oh no, he built up an expectation and it fulfilled all of those expectations. I was like, oh yeah, there's no justification here, there's no quibbling, like, oh yeah, this is and it's a finale and it's a melancholy ending, and like the fight scenes are like, I don't care about fight scenes, but when they're done really well, like, it's an art, you're like, wow, look at this go, you know, it was everything.
Daniel Warren Johnson's dynamism is off the charts when he does this stuff. I remember going back to the first issue when it was like very Lord of the Ringsy, when Bill was rallying the Asgardian troops, it was like that kind of stuff was just so cool, and he just does incredible, as you said, the foreshortened punches and the blur, and he uses all the tricks here, and they all work. The sound effects on the board, there's something about those things. You and I both love that, but I think there's something that makes the page so visceral when it's just not a sound effect that's been digitally put on top. It's drawn into the art.
It's part of the design.
Yeah.
It becomes part of the design, and therefore it lives organically within it. There's one where it's where Pip gets impaled on Searcher's hand. By the way, that drawing of that hand after it's gone through him is amazing. And then he hits the button to sort of teleport away from him after he's left a bomb on his arm. And the sound effect is, you know, teleport. And it's drawn on there. And it just lives. It brings it all. Even if this is drawn digitally, and I'm going to just assume it was.
Yeah.
It is still more organic than, you know, things that get put together in a process of several people. And I'm not taking away from letters.
No, not at all.
This process, which doesn't really happen all that anymore. I mean, it used to be like a guy who was a professional artist in comics.
Old guy with cigar.
Could do like full-on type. You know, Jack Kirby could letter his books. He could draw the thing. I mean, he didn't all the time, but he could do it. You know, they could all do that lettering and that hand-drawn, you know, that thing that only Chris Ware can do now.
Right.
And Todd Klein.
Right. And then, you know, the ending is the Valkyries come back to bring Scourge back to Valhalla. Pip is going to live because it's superhero comics. And clearly, the ship's in love with Bill, but that is never really discussed. It's all in glances and, you know, it's all very British. And then we see that Bill's not walking away from this unscathed.
No.
He goes to visit Pip in the infirmary in the ship, and Pip says he's so happy because Bill is whole again. And, you know, Bill is not whole again.
Well,
despite the fact that he can now change back and forth, he is looking into the reflection of the ship and sees his cyborg horse self, and he says, I couldn't be happier, and no one believes it.
I think that this does something really nice in terms of a full circle story, is that, you know, the first thing you think is he's on this journey so that he can look like himself again, or his image of himself.
Mm-hmm.
His lady friend, she rejects him more or less because of what he looks like. And then he's like, well, I have to fix this. He goes on this whole thing, this odyssey. And what he looked like wasn't the thing that needed to be fixed.
Yep.
And that's really interesting and dramatic because, you know, as a motivation, that's a little thin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's what I look like. That's not what it is. There's something else. Like, he regrets what he is for all sorts of reasons. And then he lost the hammer and there's all this stuff. There's like all this stuff there. And he does it in three panels.
Yeah.
Three panels, not even the whole page. it just tells you all of that.
This is a terrific miniseries. It's going to be something I give to people for Christmas. I have friends who are friends of the show, people who don't read regularly anymore, but I always give comics to on Christmas, and this will be one of the books I give out because it's just a perfect little package.
I think I started to say this and I got distracted, but what I was thinking when I was reading this was that it's really nice in comics, and I think that this keeps you and I going a lot, is that a few times a year there will be something that is exemplary. Mm-hmm. And you go, oh, this is where it comes from. You know, and it's not that everything else is bad. So before this, Superman versus the Klan or whatever that is, or that Thunderbolts miniseries, or, you know, like when we read Dragon Hoops last year, you know, just a thing that reaffirms the medium for people who love it. Yep. And this is one of those things. And now this one's, you know, Old Man Hawkeye was one of those. And you know, they'll just be a great, usually it's a mini, but sometimes it's a run. And like, I need these. They really like reinvigorate. It's fun to talk about them and see all the things that we spent all these years sort of getting to and trying to understand, and like to see them at work. You're like, oh yeah, that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I was always very excited to see Beta Ray Bill on the pull list or the shipping list.
Yeah.
And now in a week, again, full of 30 plus books and tons of heavy hitters, it may come as a surprise that up until Beta Ray Bill, the Pick League is going to be Action Comics 1033 by Daniel Warren Johnson's brother, Philip Kennedy Johnson. They're not related.
Vote Kennedy, 62.
Daniel Sampier is the artist. Adriana Lucas, Dave Sharp. Lucas, I don't know why I said it that way. Adriana Lucas, Dave Sharp. This is just part four of this War World Rising story, but Superman is in a place, and I'm going to have my Superman rant in the next book. This was an exemplary Superman comic. Did you read this?
Yeah. No, I'm reading all the Superman books in action.
We've been dealing with War World, which is, you know, Mongols' world of gladiatorial fighting, and a couple of Kryptonian slaves escaped and came back to Earth, and they've been taken care of in this Fortress of Solitude. And so it opens up with the Atlanteans have this shard that they got from War World, and it's powering a bunch of stuff. And so Amanda Waller sends Task Force X, not the Suicide Squad, but some other guys in to go steal it. That doesn't work out for them. That's the cold open. We cut to the Justice League debating this political situation, and Superman's like, what the fuck? There's a world full of slaves. We're going to go save them. And they go, yeah. But back to the politics. And then he gets really angry at the Justice League.
Yeah.
Stop. I wasn't finished. I loved this sequence.
Yeah.
So much. It was so Superman.
I also really liked, I mean, I don't want this in every book. I don't want it in most books, but the internecine sort of political squabbles that are going on, you know, like where I was like, oh yeah, Aquaman's in a rough position there. Mm-hmm. What I think was interesting is that Batman is sort of speaking for the US government in a way. Like, and I was like, I don't know that I buy that.
Right.
But it was interesting. Like, it was a good
Superman's like, I didn't come here to settle international disputes or decide the allocation of someone else's resources. I came here because right now there are runaway slaves in my home. Mm-hmm. It was powerful.
Yeah.
You know, he's got to go do this on his own. And so he and Jonathan and Kara go to fight. I just thought, as a Superman story, like what exemplifies what's great about Superman, it was this issue. And then also Mongol sends troops down to the Fortress of Solitude to get the slaves back. And Lois has to fight him off. And she was great in this. And there was also a really great bit in here with the slaves themselves talking about the chains that they wear.
And they won't take them off. Yeah.
Why they won't take them off and why they're important. I thought this was terrific. I thought the Daniel Semper art was great, too. I thought it was really solid, sort of DC House style, but I think elevated.
Yeah, I could see that. I think you're right.
I finished this issue, and I was like, wow, that was just an incredibly good comic that exemplified why I love Superman so much.
I think it's interesting because we've had a really long run of good Superman books. I don't think any of them were like amazing. There was not a Man of Steel in there or something like that, but it's been a good time to be a Superman fan in comics, I think. Even with the stuff that I didn't love. You know, we don't like his public, you know, identity getting out, or the fact that, this is all about passing the torch to Jonathan Kent, which is a thing is on the surface, I shouldn't like it, but I don't mind it. I really like the character. I like the stuff they're doing with it. Like, it's been, I get to look forward to Superman in Action Comics every time they come out, at least the first half of Action Comics. By the way, this would have been like 66% of Pick of the Week. I'm like, oh, lots of Superman books. You know, Superman Batman has been really interesting and good. Yeah, so it's been nice.
What did we gain by having his identity revealed? They don't ever deal with it anymore. I honestly forgot about it for a moment because until somebody brought it up in an issue. Like, it didn't change anything.
I think maybe it, I mean, like, it almost, it lets them focus on Superman. And we're going to slowly start to lose the facade of him going back and like, oh, I'm working on the newspaper for a little while. Like, he's not going to do that. I don't know. It's like putting the focus on the Superman part. I don't think I don't know what we've lost yet. How's that?
I don't want to get into it. It just occurred to me recently. I was like, so what was the point of that? If it doesn't even deal with it anymore, it's not even a story point.
It doesn't. And it also doesn't like, it's not like a sales event.
No.
No. I don't know. I don't know. But, you know, all that stuff aside, you know, from before Bendis, I think there was Juergens books, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just, it's been, it's
the
been a long
Cooter
time.
Art, Superman with the Beard.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Beard one, yep.
It's been a good run of Superman.
I was giving shit to the sort of backup stories in this, and it seems like a lot of the DC books, sort of the mainstream ones, are doing a backup story in there, and they are not holding my attention. That's the way I'll go with it.
Yeah.
I really also, I like that it's happening. I like that it's old-timey, like they're going to let somebody else. I just wish the stories were better.
Yeah, I don't think there's a single one I'm still reading. Like, in the beginning, I read them all, and then I'm like, I don't know if I'm reading this.
I liked the end of the Bibbo one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I finished that one.
The beginning was really weak, but by the end, it was kind of, it was fun and interesting because Jimmy was there and there was a lot of like a lot of lower tier villains and there was a whole plot. I kind of dug that. Other than that, it's been really hard. I think there's a, is this the one with Midnighter or is that a different one?
Yeah, this
one?
This one. It's
yeah, okay.
Shiloh Norman, Mr. Miracle, and Midnighter.
I tried to read that Mr. Miracle book and that it didn't really click for me. I thought that this one, I was just looking at it from the side. I thought it was Dr. Midnight, not Midnighter.
Let's talk about one of the big high-profile releases this week, Superman, Son of Kal-El, number one. It is Tom Taylor finally getting his Superman book he's been wanting forever, drawn by John Timms, who drew the Young Justice book for Bendis, Gabe Eltabe on colors, and Dave Sharp again on letters. Cover is a homage to the classic Superman cover. And I am of two minds of this issue, so I want to hear you talk about it first.
Well, I kind of alluded to it. I enjoyed it. I don't think it was, like, the most amazing thing. I don't like the general idea of Superman being replaced by his son going forward, but at the same time, I really like the stories with his son. I like watching Superman grapple and Lois grapple with this other kind of a story they never have had to. They have this kid, and, like, he's a good kid. Of course he's going to be a good kid. I don't like that everybody's constantly alluding to the fact, like, that you are going to be the best thing.
Yes. Oh, God, I hated that so much.
It'd be more interesting if there was a little more mystery to it, but we knew he was going to be okay. I don't think we think he's going to, but you know, you are the chosen one is kind of difficult. I really like Damian and his relationship a ton. Mm-hmm. Although this Damian bears no relation to the Damian in any of the books physically or mentally, but as an evolution of the Batman Superman friendship, I think it's very interesting. I think that he did it really well, in the other book, in the
deceased,
the zombie book. Yeah. So I think there's a lot to like. If you don't think about the stuff you don't like.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because I think Tom Taylor is the best DC superhero writer, like mainstream.
Since Geoff Johns.
He's the new Geoff Johns. He's not doing what Tom King's doing. He's the new Geoff Johns. Mm-hmm. He gets the world. He gets the characters. He gets how to write them. He gets how to pull at your heartstrings. He gets it. I'm not saying that wasn't happening here. The problem is foundational. The problem is that things that they were going to do before Dan DiDio got fired, which was age all the old characters out and bring in all new young characters, some of it's bleeding through for whatever goddamn reason, and now they're getting rid of Clark Kent and replacing him with his son. His son's fine. I don't really like him, but I don't really dislike him. He's just fine. I prefer Connor Kent, who is still in the universe somehow, because now we just have two of everybody. I don't like the idea of pushing Clark Kent, the most important superhero of all time, off the stage. I hated the idea of all of these people constantly talking about how he's going to be better than his father. Okay, don't shove it down our throats. These guys don't know that. And then at the end, he's like, I'm going to be better than my father. I'm going to punch climate change in the face. Well, you can't. You can't do that. You can't punch financial inequity and climate change and racism in the face. I don't want a comic full of those kinds. Like, it just, because you can't do it. I can really get a visceral thrill out of punching Brainiac in the face because he's not real, but the real issues I'm dealing with every day, he can't solve, and so I don't necessarily need to have that happen in the comic. So that was frustrating for me as well. I just don't like the idea of what they're doing. I don't want Superman pushed off into becoming some space character who's never on Earth anymore, or whatever they're going to do with him. And I hate the costume. So there's a lot of problems here for me. There's nothing to do with Tom Taylor and John Timms. I love Tom Taylor. I think John Timms is terrific. I loved his art on Young Justice. I loved it here. It's a foundational problem that I don't like. Like, I love the story was great. I love the scene where they're fighting this guy who's a out of control flame person, and the military is firing rockets at him and shooting at him, and John comes and stops all that, gives him a hug.
Gives him a hug.
I thought it was a terrific scene. Like I said, Tom Taylor is great. It's just the stuff around it. If this was a Superboy book, Superboy, Son of Kal-El, awesome.
Yeah.
All in. But I hate the idea of pushing Clark off the mantle. I hate it.
Either way, that's not going to be, even if it's for a time.
I don't know anymore, Josh. That's the problem. We don't know anymore. We just don't know.
I like them all together. I would have thought, like, again, you put this on paper and you say, well, no, he's got a son and they're all together all the time. You'd like, oh, this gets old. I'm not tired of it. I love watching him try to be a dad through the thing. Like, in the same way that I like
Superman family.
Yeah, no, like, have that be.
And I don't know what Tom Taylor's thoughts are. Obviously, don't know him, never talked to him, but he's made it clear over the years.
It's fucking impossible to talk to.
Right. He's made it clear over the years he's a huge Superman fan, and I got to wonder how he feels about finally getting a Superman book and it's not Superman.
So I'm sure it's complicated, just like your thing.
Yeah.
You know, you get a chance to do a different kind of story, make your mark. You don't have to tell the same stuff other people have, but...
So I don't know. I don't know what to think. I have very mixed feelings about this book.
I think it's like everything, though. You know, all that stuff can be going like, did I have fun reading it? Yeah. Do I want to read the next one? Yes. I'll get what I can out of it. Still a good Superman story as far as I know. Whatever happens down the road is going to be down the road.
The United States of Captain America number 2, Christopher Cantwell's miniseries exploring Captain America's influence across the country of America with art by Dale Eaglesham, at least in the main story. The backup story is written by Mahale Mashigo with art by Nacho Bustos. Talking about the first issue, this is where Cap and Sam are on a road trip because someone stole Cap's shield, dressed up in his classic Cap outfit like a speedster character, and has been besmirching Cap's name. And so they've discovered there's a whole network of local Caps around the country who are serving local needs dressed as Captain America. And this is their road trip, discovering that. I always love a road trip story. This issue was strange. Josh, you take it away.
Yeah, I should like this a lot more than I do.
Yeah, that's my feeling.
I love Christopher Cantwell's work. You know, the things that I love about him are still in here. I have always liked seeing Dale Eaglesham on stuff, but this is not clicking for me. It's very... I'm trying to think of a non-pejorative term that somebody would say social justice warrior for, but it feels like it's trying very hard to be socially relevant in a way that isn't fitting in exactly. I don't know.
It's heavy-handed.
It's heavy-handed. It's. I guess it's for me, like, if you're somewhat literate and know with like these aren't new things. I don't want to be taught this thing. And I know that comics used to be for kids and you would, you know, this is how you would teach them about the world or do whatever, but that's not who's reading these things anymore. And so it just feels like rudimentary social awareness. And then I don't know, the voices of Steve and Sam are off for me. They don't Steve is really like insecure. Like I was like, I could see these characters who aren't these two men talking on a TV show somewhere. And it'd be great. The dialogue's great. Mm-hmm. But like Steve is so unsure of himself through the whole thing. It's weird.
Yeah. I don't know if this is all still supposed to be fallout from the Secret Empire thing where nobody respects Captain America anymore, including all these cops and people who
they need
should.
To drop that.
It's terrible. And you're right. Steve is like, oh, shucks, I guess I'm okay. And Sam, you're a better Cap anyway.
You look good in that. Yeah.
It's
not Soldier Steve who
it's
has
similar
a heart.
To Superman. It's where it's like they're tearing down Steve Rogers to build everybody else up. But you don't have to tear down the classic characters in order to build up other characters. You don't have to make them feel less than to do that.
I also need I understand that he can be vulnerable and he can have self-doubt or whatever. Have that be there, but don't put it up front. Show don't tell, maybe. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't feel right. And maybe it's just a matter of, like, I cannot completely understand how if you're talking about a national emotion and a zeitgeist or whatever, I see where this comes from 100%. But I kind of am like, well, then write him as the voice we need, not what I am.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Like, he's supposed to be the hero. Be the hero. You know, do the thing. Be human. Do all those things. But, like, if he's confused like I am, fuck. He's Captain America, though. You know, like have him be the best of America.
Yeah, like the people in town yelling at him, we don't need you here. It's like, this is not the Marvel Universe that I know.
And I've also, the girl, Nichelle, Captain America, you know.
Captain America of Harrisburg.
She just wants nothing to do with them.
Yeah, that was the weird thing. It's like, why are you then dressed as him?
Yeah. And listen, I've seen that story a lot. I saw that story in 1970 in Green Arrow, Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And it's fine, but even, I mean, Ta-Nehisi Coates' Captain America wasn't this, like conflicted about everything. It was like, at least in that one, like, he's a good dude who's trying to do the right thing and isn't, you know, is sure that he's doing the right thing, at least to a certain extent. I don't know.
I just don't understand, if you're doing this story about Captain America inspiring all these people to be the Captain America of their town, which I think is an interesting story. When they first heard about this, I thought that was, well, that's interesting. The people who dress up him should at least like him. Then otherwise, why are they dressed up as him? They would pick something else to do. If she, like, she seems to actively dislike Captain America. And it's like, okay, well, then what's the point of this?
Yeah.
Why are we doing this story?
And it's, she's like, yeah, but what about Isaiah Bradley? And, you know, we just watched Sam deal with that in the other show, you know, and he's sort of made some peace with it. And I'm like, so now we have to convince everybody else to go through the story that we already watched Sam Wilson go through or read about it in other comics, which I guess is fair, but all these are valid things, but they're not necessarily entertaining. And you have to do both of those things.
Yeah. They don't dislike it. I just finished it. I was like, well, I don't understand why we're doing this. And
it's kind of, yeah. I mean, I get why we're doing it. I just don't know that it's working. Also, Dale Eaglesham is bad at drawing Captain America on a motorcycle. It doesn't look right. It's weird. Why is Sam doing wheelies?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. I thought the art of the backup was really good.
Yeah, no, actually, the backup, I think I actually enjoyed more than the front story in this one. And I thought the same thing. I was like, who's this? This art is awesome.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Yep. I don't like the one leg. I know she was a gymnast, but the costume with one leg out.
Doesn't make any sense.
No, it
does
not. Even
as a gymnast, it doesn't make any sense.
Not a bit.
You know, that Texas Blood, number 8, came out this week. I thought this was one of the better issues. I've always liked this book.
Sure.
I say it like it's coming out for 30 years. I've always enjoyed it, but in the beginning, I couldn't tell. Christopher Condon's the writer. He's from New Jersey. You know, it takes place in small town Texas. I didn't know if he was getting the voices exactly right. My whole family's from Texas, and many of them are from small towns. But I think he's settling in. This cult story is just creepy enough where it's not over the top. I really liked all the backstory here. I liked the flashbacks. I liked the relationship with the wife. I liked the relationship with the partner in the present day. I love the double page spread where they're sitting in the diner.
Yeah, that is like my favorite double page spread. And digitally, it was a page turn for me, but what a great sort of way to do things.
Well, I literally just rewatched Lone Star last weekend, with the classic late 90s John Sayles film that's very similar to this. And one of the tricks he uses in that movie is he's constantly changing time within a scene like this, where he starts on one character and pans, and then suddenly we're in the past in the same physical setting. And that's what happened here, where the double page spread, where he's on one side in the present with his partner, and he says, oh, it all happened right over there. And he points across the diner, and in the double page spread, he's there as a younger man on the other side of the diner. Like, I loved that. It was very cinematic.
So that was great. That stood out to me immensely. I think it's a great tone, and I think the dialogue and the voices are good, but it definitely is influenced by films more than real life.
Oh, yeah, which is fine. I don't think that's a problem.
I don't know that that's bad, but I think that this book has a patience to it, which is lets you live in the world for a while, which is difficult to do in comics, by the way. You can do it in a movie, but like, they really recreated that No Country for Old Men, the laconic, dreary kind of.
We're 2 issues into this new story, and we really have not, you know, really started this story yet.
Yeah. So I keep looking at it as like, okay, we're spending time with this guy, but also I'm looking at two artists sort of create a feeling that is different than what happens in a lot of comic books. And I'm in. I don't always know what it's necessarily happening, but it's interesting. It's really interesting, and I think it's pretty skilled, especially for people who are not veterans.
And Jacob Phillips is the son of Sean Phillips, who is Ed Brubaker's collaborator on his crime books, and also the colorist on those books.
Yeah, he became the colorist after they stopped working with Elizabeth Breitweiser. And I don't know if you noticed, but on the back there's a quote. It said, "That Texas Blood is the best damn comic I've read in years." Michael Lark, Lazarus and Daredevil. Yeah.
I think Phillips is a good artist, but I think he's getting better. There's a couple of really terrific cartoonist work here. Facial expressions.
Yeah.
So there's some silent stuff in the flashback between the main character and his sheriff, because here he's a deputy. You know, where they're talking to this investigator from LA, and there's some great communication going on just in their faces. Like, this was really good work. overall.
I think he's, you know, in the, if you look, I bet if you go back and look at the first issue, you're like, oh, that's Sean Phillips. And now, you know, you've got this person there. He's doing, I mean, more or less a monthly book, but a regular comic book, all the sequential storytelling, like, you know, he knew how to do it clearly, but now he's doing it on the regular, and that's going to sharpen anybody up who's got skills. Mm-hmm. And it just looks, it's starting to look a little less like Sean Phillips than it did before. Obviously there's, you know, there's influence there. How could there not be?
Yeah, for sure.
And by the way, if you're going to be influenced by somebody in storytelling and comics, I couldn't tell you a better guy, you know, than Sean Phillips. So it's, yeah, it's impressive.
And what's interesting also is that it's taking the Brubaker Phillips thing, which is doomsday sex cult in LA, Hollywood, mm-hmm. and bringing it into small town Texas here. So it's got a little bit like a, it's almost like, I'm not saying it's a homage to that, but it feels like that's something the story they'd be doing. But they'd be mm-hmm. doing it in LA, you know,
and
in
it would focus on the criminal. Whereas this, we're spending time with the quote unquote good guy.
Yeah. I like this issue a lot. So it was really good.
Yeah. I did too. I look forward to it when I see a new one has come out.
So the big release this week, saving it for last, Strange Adventures number 11 of 12. This is the Tom King, Mitch Gerrits, Doc Shaner, Clayton Cowles book. This is the penultimate issue. We've got the big thing that happens here. And this whole issue is basically an argument between, I was going to say Dr. Strange, Adam Alana. Strange, and his wife Alana, as he admits to doing the thing that we suspected he had done, which is trade his daughter for peace on Ron. This went in several directions I wasn't expecting, and very much greatly reaffirms the idea that this is a Black Label book out of continuity. Because if not, they would have ruined Adam Strange forever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when you pull a gun on your wife, it's basically over at that point.
I have mixed feelings, and I part of me is thinking, I think in 12, we're going to shift in some way that I don't see coming. And I'm hoping. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that's going to be. I'm very open to it, because this is a rough place to leave a story.
Well, we have an issue, and again, we keep going back to this. Mr. Miracle didn't make full sense until issue 12.
Right.
So we'll see.
You know, that said, that the work being done in here, the sort of craft of it, there's some real, I mean, I don't know a better looking book. Mm-hmm. And two guys who don't really have similar styles also just working so well together.
Yep.
You know, and I mean, they're both doing career work. These weird owl alien things was just brilliant sci-fi comic book.
Great design. Great design.
Yeah. And you know, how the story, when their arms pop out, and there's a bit where he's like, they're describing how they would kill us in quite a bit of detail, you know, and then you actually see that they follow through on that later.
Yeah.
When they get the Picts, and like, I was like, that is space comics. Mm-hmm. That's, I don't know if it's good old fashioned superheroes, but it's like good old fashioned space fantasy.
Right.
Gasp.
Guff.
Gosh. You know, but I, you know, that I was like, oh, that's the kind of thing that got EC Comics shut down. You know, that made me really happy. And then the other side, the drama and going back and forth between Strange and Alana, like back in their moment of quote unquote victory, as it's interspersed with now and the context that gives each of those scenes, it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it's hard to read, and that's not necessarily bad, but it's a lot. So I think it's really good. I really appreciate it, and I like reading it, but it's not the same as enjoying it.
Yeah, I mean, you don't like it. You know, Adam Strange lays it all out. He did all the things that has been alluded to. He made a deal. They have his daughter. They got to save Ron. They're all alive. They've killed a lot of Picts. He's like, this is a good deal. Mm-hmm. His wife's not buying it. She smacks him a few times. He pulls his gun on her. They wrestle for the gun, and the gun goes off several times, pew, pew, pew. And the issue ends with Adam Strange having been shot several times in the abdomen on the ground.
By the way, even if it's Black Label, you can't have him shoot his wife.
No, no.
No, that's not going to...
I mean, it's bad enough he pulled his gun on her and he's walking around with his gun pointed at her and yelling at her with the gun pointed at her, clearly unhinged.
Is she a Pict?
I don't think so.
Well, something's going to happen.
Well, something's going to happen in issue 12. The question is what? And that will decide, I think, this is the ultimate success of this miniseries, which we've enjoyed very much. But, you know, we've got to see how this plays out to say if this is really successful or not.
Yep. So I guess we'll see.
mm-hmm.
when it comes around. Ah, the patrons. Do you guys know about the patrons?
I've heard of them.
Yeah, yeah. So apparently, I'm not aware of it. Apparently, we have set up this thing on patreon.com/FM, which is a crowdfunding platform. The people who really like the show and are committed to it, they throw in, they contribute. So the way that works is, the patrons really bring us across the line, which has been the case forever now. Even before we called it patron, we had the iFanboy members.
Yeah.
And, it warms our hearts. So here's what has happened, though, as a direct result of that. There's the patron picks, there's the talk explodes, there's the book explodes, there's the media explodes. So it's stuff that made the regular show better. It's extra shows that came along. There's monthly patron hangouts. The YouTube shows are going up there. It's more time with us, which works out because I like spending more time with Connor and Ron on some of those shows. So that's been really good. And we thank everyone for doing that. There is new stretch goals. It took us a year, but we said, hey, I don't think people really want this G.I. Joe thing. Fair enough. If we hit our next stretch goal on Patreon, we are going to add a comic book TV show special edition to our regular roster shows. We're not going to cover every comic book show.
And we're not going to cover it week to week. We're going to do a wrap up when the season or series ends.
So when a show is done, so we would do a show on The Boys season one or on, I don't know, apparently there's a Runaway show. But we will not be able to do all of them.
The shows we're watching already,
yeah,
we will cover as when they wrap up season-wise. We will cover all those shows. There's a lot of them.
Yep.
We're watching a lot of them.
Yep. And then finally, there's the Patron Facebook group over on Facebook and the Patron Discord server on Discord, which are just, it's really nice to see those communities again. We've talked about that before. Thank you to everybody who does that. And I know you hear me say thank you all the time. I'm an inveterate thanker. I thank people constantly and I always try to mean it. And I do mean it. But I think people are like, oh, he always says thank you.
Wait a minute.
What?
Do you mean it when you thank me?
I do. Okay. Like I have people who work for me. I only have like several employees, who are on my team. And I'm constantly like, thank you, did a great job. And like, they're all like, all right, you say it all the time. I was like, but I mean it. I really do. And I mean it to them too. iFanboyThreadless.com is a place where you can get either t-shirts primarily is the first deal. But after that, there's many forms of upper body wear. That can have these designs put on them and other various items that are there. You should go there and check it out. The amount of product is almost staggering at ifanboy.threadless.com. And also, they do great, like, my Threadless shirts that I've done through the, like, they're holding up. They're really good.
Mm-hmm.
I love that, Heather. I think it's Tri-Blend.
Tri-Blend. Yep.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And the other stuff, too. There are 8 designs currently. We have 2 new shirts being added to the store very, very soon. It says if not already. I would be shocked if this was available.
Yeah, they might. There's an outside chance they're going to be on the store by the time you hear this, but probably not. But very, very soon.
We would prefer to make sure that they're what we want.
Yeah.
Finished. So that will. But really soon. Like they're like we've been saying they're in development. They actually are. So then there's, you don't want to deal with any of that stuff. You don't want to sign up for a thing. There's ifanboy.com/support. You'll find a direct donation link via PayPal if that's the thing that you want to do. That's how we did it in the old days. That's how Dad did it. Is that the Marvel line we reference the most that no one else does?
Yeah.
I love it.
I love that line.
I don't know why. It's great. And it's the enunciation, too. There's ifanboy.com/Amazon. You can find links to buy the books that we talk about in the books below. You can find the links. There's always the pick of the week is linked. The music and the show is linked on the show page. And just the general link, if you go through there, that's our affiliate link. And we thank everybody who does those things to keep the show going and keep us motivated to make sure that we're paying you back for what you're investing. And now, ring a ding ding.
So we haven't done the bell segment since 2019. So if you're a new listener since then, you don't know. Occasionally, in the past, probably 6 or 7 times, well, we've brought the bell out when there's a lot of books we want to talk about and not enough time. So what happens here is Josh and I have a list of books. We get 20 seconds on the clock for each book. At the end of 20 seconds, the bell rings. Your time is done. Move on to the next book.
So here's my question.
Yeah.
You will be timing, but can you time while you're doing it yourself, or should I time you?
No, I can do it when I'm doing myself.
Okay, all right. You have a system. I just want to make sure
it's a bit of a cheat because I can see how much time I've got left, and I don't get cut off usually. But
right, I see what you're saying.
I can definitely do it.
Okay,
we haven't done it in a couple of years, so it's a little rusty. Also, my neighbors might murder me, but
I think that's fine.
My old neighbor didn't care. Who knows? My new neighbors will see.
I was just thinking about the guitar guy, and I was like, oh, that's not this place.
No, that's not this place. But it's early in the morning here. But
I just had a panic attack because I looked, and I was like, I don't remember anything about this book that I'm supposed to talk about in 20 seconds.
That's okay. You only have 20 seconds to fill. So
we're
going to start things off.
Did you say I only have 20 seconds to fail?
Fill. I'm going to start things off. I'm going to hit the timer in 3, two, one. My first book is Gru Meets Tarzan, number one from Dark Horse, Sergio Aragonés and Mark Evanier. This was just strange enough to pick up. I was a huge Gru fan as a kid when it was one of my favorite comics. This is 80-something Sergio Aragonés drawing a full-on Gru Meets Tarzan book with crazy panels and Comic-Con jokes, and I love the hell out of it. I can't wait to...
It was so fun. Robin number four is Robin is still in this Lazarus competition, and he goes and he has a little conversation with his grandpa. It is trying to sort of like tell him what to be and how he's doing wrong things and helping him. And it was really nice because it's the two sides of Damien. I really enjoyed this series a heck of a lot. I really like the art. It should be terrible. It isn't. It's super fun.
Missed the button. Fuck. All right, there we go. Avengers Mech Strike number 5. This is the final issue of this miniseries, which is super high in the gosh scale. This is all about the Avengers fighting Kang throughout time, and then Black Panther getting the power of Eternity and fighting Kang with his power and basically turning Kang against himself. And this was the best Avengers story I've read in ages. Fun art, great story, great characters, and Kang.
We have Black Knight, Curse of the Ebony Blade, number 5. Man, the first bit of this was great, and as we kept moving through it, I was like, oh... What he's doing is passing the torch onto a younger character, a female who is of color. And I have no problem with that, but every single book does it. And it's super transparent. I was like, all right. Have her move around. So good book.
What am I on? Shang-Chi number 3. This continues Shang-Chi's trip to the Marvel Universe. This issue is with Wolverine. And I'm actually really liking this team up storylines he's doing. It was tied into the film to make him feel part of the bigger Marvel Universe, but I thought this particular story where you deal with the mutant side of things and how the mutants are hated by these clans was really good.
Batman Superman number 20. I liked this all along. I don't think I liked it as much as you did, but as we get to the end of this story and we're going through different worlds, I love this book. And it is a shame that he's not going to keep doing it, because I've really come to look forward to this and enjoy it. It's crazy. And it's so good. And it's so well written. Also, the best Etrigan dialogue.
Your order's up. Icon and Rocket season 1, number 1. This is the second milestone book. And much like Static, it was just okay. It was kind of a bummer. It was Reggie Hudlin, who's a... he's a veteran of the comics industry and the entertainment industry, makes films and TV shows and comics, and it just was kind of dull, and not really compelling, and it's a bummer.
Super routine. Batman Reptilian number 2. This is Garth Ennis and Liam Sharp. I should love the bejesus out of this, and I like it a lot, but it's weird, and I keep thinking it's Dave McKean. I'm not sure. I don't know why he's doing it, but I guess it's supposed to be Steve Dillon's story.
Yep.
So, I'm glad it exists. I'm going to read it. I'm done.
I cede my time to the man from California. The Scumbag number 8. This is the result
nine.
Of... 9. Shit, 9. This is the result of the Ray zapping Earth and everybody turning into Ernie. Ernie's powers or Ernie's personalities now infected everybody on Earth, and he developed a superhero team. There's a lot of unexpected sci-fi and superhero elements in this, but I really enjoyed it. Ernie is just really compelling.
Lost my place. Yusuke Ujimbo, the Dragon Bellow Conspiracy number 2. I got to tell you, at this point, every time a new Usagi issue comes out, and there's two monthly series going on right now, and I love it. I'm so happy to read Usagi Ujimbo in a way that I never did. I know exactly what they make me happy. They're like the best comfort food in comics.
Where am I? Oh, the Blue Flame number 3. This is... I don't know what to make of this book. I still don't feel like I don't know what it means or what it's trying to say or what it's trying to do. It exists in two parallel timelines. I don't get it. I want to get it. I want to like it more than I do. I'm not feeling it right now. I'm not giving up on it, but I'm not understanding it.
I'm just going to say Spanish Larry to you. Made in Korea number 4. I did not see this book going where it's going, and I can't tell you if I like it or don't, because it is super interesting, but it's incredibly like disturbing. I'm reading, I'm like, no, don't do this. And it's very stressful and kind of weird that it's a Columbine story so long after the fact. But more or less, it's a good book.
Black Cat number 8. This is strange also, because it comes on the heels of the strange Marvel annual story about the Infinity Stones in here. The Black Cat is on a heist, and she is trying to steal something very important, and fake Nick Fury tries to stop her, and the result is she has stolen Star's body. And I don't know what that means, but I enjoyed
it. When did that happen?
I don't know.
Daredevil number 32. It's a really good-looking book, and out of all the female Avatar characters, I really like this Elektra as Daredevil, but at the same time, make this story stop or get to the point. Get on it, okay? Let's do the showdown with all the people and move along.
You got more time. 3 seconds. Friend. 2 seconds.
I'm good. Take a breathe.
Shadow Doctor number 5, again, the final issue of this 5-issue miniseries. I thought it ended rather abruptly, but then I thought about it. I thought, okay, well, that, if you're going to end it at 5 issues, that'd be a good place to end it. In this issue, the Doctor, who has thought that Al Capone is sort of his fucked up friend, Al Capone reveals his true racist colors, and so that inspires the Doctor to go to the feds and talk about Al Capone. What does that mean? I don't know, because we're done.
Old Guard Tales Through Time number 4. This is the one where we had Matt Fraction and Steve Lieber doing a story that I thought was great and looked really good that I don't fully understand. And then after that, we have this rad Civil War era story. And it was kind of everything I wanted out of a book. I'm trying to look at who did it, but David F. Walker.
And finally for me, Fantastic Four 34. With the last issue was Pick of the Week. This issue could have also been Pick of the Week. This book is so high on the gosh scale. This is one of our favorite books. This is the aftermath of the wedding in which Johnny Storm was revealed to have slept with Doom's fiance, and there's a big fight, and there's Doombots, and it was just so satisfying and terrific.
Oh, she put the face on?
Yeah.
Symbiote Spider-Man number 4, Crossroads number 1. Peter David is just having like a moment where they're like, just do Peter David comics, and he's like, will do. And I didn't care about the cover or I didn't care about the story, but you know, you want your gosh, you want to talk about your good old superheroes, man. Give Peter David, even Greg Land here. It was great. It was super fun, and it's exactly what I wanted it to be.
All right, there you go. That's the bell segment. Whew, that was stressful.
It was.
What's funny is I had all the books I had lined up on my iPad, and there was just no time to even open them. So I just,
yeah,
I'm amazed I remember everything, to be honest with you. But that was fun. It sort of forces you to really get to the heart of what you're talking about.
The only problem is afterwards, I didn't get there.
That's true.
I didn't have it.
So even though we did all those books, I think I added up, I still, of all the books we talked about today, I still have like 12 books I read we didn't talk about on the show. That's how many books I had this week. So that's the bell segment. Let's move on to the patron pick. I thought this was going to be a short show. We'd have tons of email time, but we're not getting there. Patreon.com/iFanboy. If you are a patron, every patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. That's what the patron pick is, just a book to add to the rundown. This week, the winner by a huge margin was Amazing Fantasy number 1 by Kerr Andrews, a story and art by Kerr Andrews, letters by Josephino. This is a 5-issue miniseries, a fantasy book set in the Marvel Universe. First of all, so Kerr Andrews was the guy that took over on the Immortal Iron Fist after David Aja. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. That was a long time ago.
No, I do not remember that. I know who he is.
We didn't like it. We were like, oh, this is terrible, and we stopped reading it. Oh. He went away for a while. He made some films, came back, and he deploys so many art styles in this. Not 100, but like 4 or 5. Yeah. And they're all terrific.
I mean, the first time I ever saw him, he did like a Spider-Man story in like a manga style.
Oh, yeah.
And it was really interesting. Like, the story wasn't amazing, but the art was something to look at. And he shows up every once in a while, you know, and does interesting stuff. He's like, I can't think of an equivalent that they have at DC, but you kind of literally don't know what to expect.
No.
And I was reading this and I see Amazing Fantasy, and to me, that's what Amazing Spider-Man was called before it became, changed into Amazing Spider-Man for all sorts of publishing reasons. So I kind of just thought, it'll be like a throwbacky thing. And I don't think I paid much attention to the cover, which is fantastic.
Great cover. Bearded Steve Rogers riding a winged lion with an axe and arrows in his shield. How'd those arrows get embedded in that shield?
Not the point. So as we go through it, it started to occur to me. I was like, oh, I get it. It's a fantasy story with these characters. Mm-hmm. And I went, all right, cool. Let's do
that's
that.
That's basically the reaction I had. I thought this was a lot of fun. The premise is a bunch of classic Marvel characters, Captain America, Spider-Man, and Black Widow, are pulled out of the time stream at various times, but it's all very early. We have 40s Cap in the war.
Oh, I want that book, by the way. I want that book badly.
Young Natasha, Red Room era. She's probably like 12, pulled out of her world there. And then 60s teenager Spider-Man. I love how this none of this makes sense time-wise. It's
doesn't have to.
Natasha's in the 80s with like Reagan as the president. He's just about to become president. So it's 1980. You've got 40s Cap and you've got 60s Peter Parker. And they're all pulled out of the timeline and brought to this fantasy island. There's like orc-esque characters and there's...
Ricardo Montalban is there.
Spider-Man is in a Looney Tunes scenario where he wakes up in a pot full of carrots, which is something happened to Bugs Bunny all the time. Steve has to save the young cat lady from being killed by orcs. And, you know, there's just a lot going... We don't know what's going on yet. And they haven't even met each other. They don't know that there's other people here. But the Kara Andrews art, each character's story had its own art style. I loved the Peter Parker art. I loved the Steve Rogers art. I really liked the Black Widow art. And then the actual action on the island has its own particular style. I just thought this looked great. And I had tons of fun reading it. It's just wacky enough that I liked it.
Yeah, I did too. It was kind of all of those things, and I had no idea what to expect. And it was laid out in such a way that it was super confusing for a while. And I was like, wait, did I miss something? And then you get to this point where, you know, a tubby old man with gray beard and hair comes out, and he's really happy to see Peter, and it's Uncle Ben. Mm-hmm. And my instinct to that is usually like, oh, don't do that. You know, but I read it for the page, and he basically was like, we're all dead. And I was like, all right, you got me. I'm grabbed by this, and it's just sort of complete novelty, which is really a rare thing in Marvel Comics, and you know, just the sort of silly fun.
And we see that the island, we pull out of the island, and it's actually a floating space situation. It's floating in space. It's an island that is,
yeah,
who knows, it's like an asteroid but an island,
who knows.
It doesn't matter, it's like a Beyonder situation. I'm enjoying this for the weirdness of it.
What I had said to you was, all right, fine, it's a patron pick, we'll read it, but it's going to have to be really good for me to keep going on this. And I think I was like, I think I might keep going on this. So
I liked it. In the beginning, I was like, ooh, look at this art. And then it changed, and I was like, oh, I missed that Cap art. And then it changed, and I was like, oh, look at this art. Yeah. And then I missed that art. And it was a good-looking book. Listen, young Steve, young Peter, young Natasha stuck on a weird sci-fi island together. I've never heard that story before. So let's go for it. I liked it. Ratings on Amazing Fantasy number one. Ratings out of 5. I'm going to go 4.
Same, 4.
Sticking with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I am too. I was expecting to, but I am.
Yep, same.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. If you become a patron, every patron can vote to add a book to the rundown, but if you get the $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower live on the show, like Juan Ponce. Juan. Here's the thing about Juan.
Did you mean to pronounce it like that?
Juan Ponce.
Juan Ponce.
Juan Ponce. This is a power that is intrusive to other people, but listen, I don't control the powers. The powers just, that's what they are. I'm just reporting what the powers are.
Sure.
Juan has to use this power delicately. Juan can look at you and he will know what you're pulling down after taxes.
I got to give you points for delivery. I have to.
What are you pulling down after taxes?
It's
Knox.
That's Knox. I was going to say somebody who should get a grant. Grant.
Yeah. What's he pulling down after taxes?
The thing is, Bruce Wayne was so rich that the after taxes was irrelevant. I mean, I'm sure he lost a lot to taxes, but it was still an impressive number.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's all capital gains anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway,
he's got a
Juan will just know what you're pulling down after taxes. Now, that's intrusive, obviously, but...
Well, it's only if he does something with the information.
Sure.
If he just knows, he can't even help it.
It's Juan's cross to bear.
All right. Fair enough. Kid Keith. And this is strange, but again, this is not my fault. I'm just the messenger. It's not my fault.
Uh-oh.
Kid Keith has an area of effect sort of power that makes people forget all lyrics.
Oh.
You can't sing along. You don't want him going to your live show.
Yeah, for sure.
Like you don't want to. He can't even go to shows. It's always a terrible experience for him.
What about a karaoke night?
I mean, if you're reading, I guess it's going to be okay. But you definitely have to have those there. You couldn't like get off script and like do like a big... You know, big note. He could sit further back. He just can't be right against the stage. Although the people around him who would want to sing along would not be able to.
Oh, interesting.
Forget all lyrics.
Yeah.
They come back. They're not scrubbed.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. John Costello can magically skewer any food with a popsicle stick.
I'm seeing a benefit there.
Let's say you're eating a steak. And you're like, man, I wish I was holding this steak like a popsicle and just chewing on it. John Costello, boom, your steak's now on a popsicle stick.
Is it okay?
It's a big enough popsicle stick. It's a big enough.
So you don't have to supply the stick.
No, it just appears in the food.
Okay, that's key. So it goes up the steak, so it's not like you've got like 2 inches in there and a big floppy beef.
Juices. It's on appropriate you. Size and strength for whatever you skewered.
Because that just seems inconvenient. I'd rather stick with the plate.
Yeah, no, I listen, maybe not a steak, because then you got steak juice dripping everywhere, but like, you know.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Is that a roaster chicken? Yeah. I was with John. This guy's crazy. Could you put like a beer can on a popsicle stick?
It's got to be food.
Okay.
Like a waffle, you know.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Off-white. Savior or savoir? No, off-white savior. That's what it'll be. This person, any contact that they make with any other human will make that other human feel as if they just had a great hug.
Oh.
So, you know, like the shake hand there, and all of a sudden, like, I feel great. I don't know what it is. I just feel comfortable and supported. And, you know, when you just break away from a great hug, that moment.
Right.
It's a gift is what it is.
It just makes you feel good.
Yep. Although, you know, there are awkward side effects, you know, in business you know, situations. Although I can't imagine that only good should be able to come of that. Like, you can diffuse situations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go and you can add a book to the rundown and you can get your superpower live on the show and you can support the show. We think everyone does that. Normally, I would say no email because we're already long, but we did mention one email, so I'm going to have to do that one.
Looks like I have plenty ready for next week.
You do. Paul P. writes and says, I don't know if it's my age, I'm 45, the amount of comics releasing each month or more frequently that I want to keep up on, or the fact that I'm reading more non-superhero comics than ever. But the only way I can read monthly comics these days and keep track of on each one's plot and characters is to do the double-up approach, i.e., right before I read the latest issue, I will reread the previous issue as a full recap. Although this means my new comic book days are often twice as much reading involved than if I only read the latest issues, I found it really enhances the flow and thus my enjoyment of each story. Plus, I'll often pick up on things I missed during the first readings. Have you tried this approach, or do you have any other suggestions for getting recaps fresh in your mind before tackling new comics each Wednesday? I don't want to wait on trades for everything, even though that is sometimes the best way to fully engage in a story.
No.
Not possible.
Could you? What if this thing that I'm trying to fit in your life was twice as long?
I had 34 books. You want to read...
He's not suggesting
68... comics?
I'm not going to fault Paul for having the fortitude and having making this a priority so that he enjoys his thing more. I get it. I wouldn't do that. I do think, though, that if you happen to have the last issue, a flip through probably couldn't hurt.
Sure.
I don't tend to, I'm just not organized in that way. So I don't do that, but I could see how that would be helpful. In fact, I should probably do that more. Like, if I'm 5 pages in, don't remember, like, just look at the last issue, flip through.
Let me be clear. It's not a bad solution at all. I'm sure it's very helpful.
I wouldn't want to read it twice, though. I don't think many of them are good enough to do that.
So it's just not feasible. For us, it's not feasible.
Yeah.
As I said many times, we are not your normal comic fan. We have, you know, 36 hours to get these books read before the show starts. So there's no way doubling up. Even a small week, like a 10-book week, I still just don't have time for it.
I got to say, I really like diving in. And I consider it to be a strength of the book, you know, it's a different situation. You are reading solely for your enjoyment, whereas this is only part of it. But I kind of leave it up to the book. Like, this is supposed to be monthly. Have you set me up to be able to enjoy this? Or did you write it for a different format? I like issues. Normally, if I catch up on a book in trades that I'd missed, and then I will jump over to issues and keep going that way. I like the serial format a lot.
Now, having said that, though, there's many times where one of us has said, oh, I fell behind, so I read the last three issues, and we'd liked it even more.
Yes.
The benefit is certainly there of having read a chunk of the story and having it fresh in your mind. I mean, that's happened several... Like,
yes.
For Avengers Mech, when that was my pick of the week, I had read all the first three. I think issue 3 was my pick of the week, and I had read the first three all at once because I had decided to catch up on it. You know, there's been other times where I'm behind. Like, for instance, you know, when Josh took a week off, he usually doesn't read his books. He has to double up when that happens. I'll have a couple to double up on next time, you know, in two weeks.
I read them very slowly, but usually there's some left over.
Yeah, so, like, that certainly happens, and it's beneficial. It's just that as a practical matter, it's not possible.
I really like the sensation of the click. Like, when I'm reading it, and I'm like, what is good? Okay, right, okay. and then it comes back. Because I have a pretty good, I'm not good with recall anymore, like bringing the thing back, but it's there. You know what I mean? So I won't remember that I remember something until I do, and then I'm okay.
Yeah,
usually.
And I don't know any other methods really to do than to, you know, you can either read them in trade or you can read them, you know, in chunks. But, you know, there's a lot of books that come out. Marvel has recap pages, and I will often glance at those, at least just like the last couple of sentences, be like, oh, right, that's what happened. Mm-hmm. But DC doesn't do that, so you have to really sort of, you know, figure it out.
I think the recap page is, like, that should be mandatory. Yeah. But then that's another page for them. That's a page that they got to pay somebody to do.
Right.
That's a page they got to print. Yeah. I understand why they don't. Or if I have to lose a page of story so that you can do that, then I don't want that either. I want you to write, you know, write the story so that I don't have to. And I don't care. Also, I don't mind if they refresh me within the story without, you know, even if you wouldn't really do that in real life.
Right.
I think that's part of the comic book issue experience. They should do that more. Even if it seems out of place.
It's tough, Paul. I mean, ideally, sure. It'd be great to be able to like flip through every issue in the past and look at them. But, and also, I mean, look, I love the digital reading. It's much preferable to me than the paper reading. But that's a downside to digital. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, previously I'd have a stack of books. Because normally I'd let up like a couple of months stack up before I put them in a long box. And it's much easier to just grab it out of the stack and flip through.
But you can
it.
Also, like on Comixology, you can flip back. You can see
for sure, but
it's just not right there. And it is, though.
It is and it
literally,
isn't.
You don't have to move. Go to the cover, swipe right.
No, I know, but it's just different than like really quickly like flipping through an issue. You can flip through it faster than you can swipe through it in terms of recognition. I just tend to not do it. And like we said, it's just not the time for us to go back and look at all the previous issues.
That's a great question. Thank you for that conversation. Yeah. I'm real glad that works for you. And I'm also very impressed that at 45 you have the time for that. And that's not being snarky.
No.
I really am. Contact at ifanboy.com is where you can send emails. If you have a question for a Media Splode show, you can put Media Splode in the subject line. You know, make it good because there's a lot of competition for a one monthly show.
That's true.
We get to what we can. It is really fun to do those. So maybe we'll pull some into the Hangout or something like that so they don't go to waste. But,
what are the shows out now besides our regular show? We have our special edition Black Widow review show. We have our special edition Batman the Long Halloween Part 1 review show. We have our latest Media Splode show, which was a mailbag show. Speaking of emails, we had let a bunch pile up, so we decided to answer 4 or 5, and I thought it was terrifically fun. I liked doing that episode a lot. Coming up soon in August is our next Book Splode, which is on True Believer, The Rise and Fall of Stan Lee by Abraham Reisman.
Fabian Reisman.
Oh, shit, I read the wrong one. And that's our first ever prose Book Splode. We'll be talking about that next month. And overdue...
Oh, technically, as you're reading this, it's not overdue, but as you're listening to this, it is.
Talks blowed from Josh.
I could show you a list of how much pull I no longer have in comics of people who have not responded to me. It's a good list, too. Like, they would have been great shows. I'm still working on it. I have no need to put up a facade. That's where we are.
The thing with the Talks blowed, as we said before, is... Anytime you're dealing with a guest, it can be a pain in the ass to schedule. You will get 6 Talksplodes in 2021. Whether you get them exactly in the proper monthly release form is probably not going to happen, but you'll get 6.
And to be fair, I have the next one. I know who it is that I want to do, and it is based on timing, so I didn't want to move it up. Yeah, so we'll get there. You'll get your 6, and they'll be good. That's the other thing. Like, I don't want to talk to just anybody. I want it to be a good show. I want it to fit in the kind of thing that I like to do. So that's the thing. Just like the designs for the t-shirts. Mm-hmm. Got to be right.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our shows and our vast history of comic book writing from all of the people who have written for the site over time. You'll find links to most of the comic book podcasts that we have ever done that are there. It is an enormous amount. I think, you know, that talk explodes in the 90s. We should be coming up on 100.
Yeah.
You know, at some point soon. So there's a lot of sort of comic book oral history in there. You can like facebook.com/ifanboy and @ifanboy on Twitter. And @ifanboycomics on Instagram. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. You can follow us individually @CSKilpatrick on Instagram, @JAFlanagan on Instagram. And you can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy to keep up to date with the old ifanboy video show re-uploads. This is what it was like me talking for an hour last week. This past week, there was a mini, and it's a new comics preview from June 18th, 2008. That is probably not going to be as relevant as some of the others.
I believe that's the one we shot at Alex Robinson's house right after we interviewed him.
Oh, that's when I made one of my best friends.
I looked at the thumbnail. I'm standing on a balcony in Manhattan. That's got to be
Yeah, that's his. I've slept in that room a lot since then. He doesn't live there anymore. Pick of the week podcast number 200 live. Is that Hanley's?
Our first live show at Hanley's. We broke it up in two shows. The first show was the actual show itself. The second show was the audience questions that we took, which is this. That's what this one is.
That was a life-affirming moment. Yeah. Like, that's one of those milestones in my life. So that's great. That's a good time. I can still have a very strong memory of sitting there and just being like, why is this happening? And we would be doing the show like normal, but then people would laugh and clap.
That was the show where I realized that I had a woman from high school listened that I didn't know. Uh-huh. She was there. And then a guy from elementary school listened. And I don't think either one of them knew it was me. It was very
now,
strange.
Now, I have relationships with both of those people over social media.
One of them. I don't think you do the second one.
It starts with an L?
Yeah. You do?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And
Paul was there. It was a good show. It was a good night.
It was. Did we meet Paul there?
I don't remember. He was definitely there, though.
You want to know what else about that show?
What?
That was the day that we learned about Jimsky's first child, who's, like, if not driving yet, old.
Listen, if you like the show, we are old. Leave us a review, star rating, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your friends, tell your mom, your letter carrier, all the people that you talk to every day. Word of mouth is great to spread the love. And I am Connor.
I'm Josh. I'm so glad you're back. That was very fun.
Stay safe out there.
Do the right thing. Follow your conscience, people. You know what the right thing is. Take care of other people. That's the point. Please stop.